Welcome to Color and Ceramics, the podcast for ceramic artists who want valuable ideas about using color from leading artists and world-class experts. Here's your host, Bob Acton, a sculptor and ceramic artist who's fascinated with color and how potters, sculptors, and artists use color in their work. Tune in as he talks with his guests about color, techniques, and the impact of color on people and art itself.
Hi, I'm Bob Acton, the host of the Color and Ceramics podcast. Welcome to the show today, and I am very excited to share my conversation with CJ Gillick from California in the United States. CJ creates beautiful, colorful work that is inspired by the sensuality of nature. Her work explores the connection between botanical forms and human sexuality. By abstracting flower blooms and focusing on their reproductive elements, she invites viewers to engage with themes of beauty, desire, and attraction, really drawing subconscious links between the natural world and human instinct. Well, you are in for a treat today, so let's get to the show. CJ, thanks for joining me today on the Color and Ceramics podcast. I am super excited about you joining us here today. I love your work. I love the high color that you use and really see you as a colorist who is right at the top of their game. So thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be on today.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. We'll talk about all sorts of stuff. But, you know, one of the things that I usually start off with when we have a conversation with somebody is ask them to tell us a little bit about their journey that has got them to where they are today. And so I wonder if you could do that. Tell us a little bit about what you're up to these days and sort of your path to get there.
Sure thing. Well, I think starting with the path, I come from Chicago area of Illinois, and I grew up in a family that much appreciated nature, hiking, exploring, really animals, every ounce of nature, everything was surrounded by nature. And I think that really set me on my path that we see in my artwork today. So my parents were very supportive of me becoming an artist. And so as soon as I started college, I was already on a path to attend art school, which was fantastic. You know, a lot of people struggle with, you know, maybe not being supported in that path, but yeah. I was lucky enough to be supported. And so I ended up going to school in Southern Illinois, University of Carbondale. And while I was working down there, I was doing a lot of low fire salt and, you know, with these subtle blushes of color and, you know, really looking for surfaces that integrated with the clay forms. And while I was there, I met a good friend of mine and he recommended that I start wood firing. And he had a friend who just built a wood kiln and they were so excited about it. So I started traveling to California to wood fire. And, you know, I loved everything about wood fire. I loved being out in nature, processing the wood, loading the kilns, all the physical labor of it, just everything about wood fire I loved, and ended up moving to California for the kiln. So, you know, many people have many reasons to move, but for me, it was the kiln. And so I ended up wood firing for close to 15 years. And I think people who are currently aware of my work find that, you know, very bizarre, such a huge jump to go from the land of wood fire to such bright, bright, vivid color. So it was a very conscious leap for me. I had been making these slab built forms that were very architectural in spirit, and I saw them as completely utilitarian and no one ever used them. You know, they just felt they were too sculptural to be used. And I found that very disappointing because I really wanted that play between use and, you know, function and form and all of that. So I decided, well, if people aren't going to use the work, then I might as well go sculptural. And at that point I started feeling as if I had a little bit more to say. And decided to make the jump. So, as I went off to grad school, I switched over to making sculpture. And that's an ironic one as well, because I went to Utah State, University of in Logan, and Utah State University Logan. And it's known as a wood fire school. I think most people would kind of classify it as that. So it was me and my bright colors in the land of wood fire, but it was a fantastic place to be. And I really enjoyed my time there. So it was the right choice for me. And I did. I broke out of wood fire and engaged with color as much as
Boy,
I could.
boy, did you ever. I mean, boy, you are you super bright colors, right? So tell us a little bit about that transition for you, how you, like, I understand the form changed that you were working with, but also the surface changed for you.
Yeah, it changed quite a bit. So, I had an integration between the surface and the wood fire, and I loved the textural formats that I was using. But in that change, I'd gone from being inspired by so much architecture with almost this layer of natural surfaces being put over it as a skin to really becoming much more interested in botanical forms, sea creatures, insects, and tying all of those together now became the platform for the form and the surface. And so building up of that texture again is still key to my work before layering on the color that I use. And so the two kind of built hand in hand as my form started to change from that architectural format into the more botanical, the color came with it. And real funny story, John Neely had been out of town on sabbatical I want to say like the whole first semester that I was in grad school. And I made the big change that very first semester. And so when he came back from his sabbatical, he just kind of looked at my work and was like, "Wow, where did you come from?"
What happened?
The major change had been going on. And he ended up being one of my greatest supporters with it. I was for a while thinking, "Oh, maybe I'll just stay in the porcelain realm, keep everything white." And we were having a conversation one day, and he's like, "Well, I just don't understand that because, a lot of the work that you're making, looks dangerous. It looks as if you don't quite know what it's gonna do. So why would you play it so safe with color?" And
Yes.
so I think that was just like the last little bit of encouragement that I needed. And man, boy, did I jump into color.
No kidding. It's gorgeous. Now, when you were you said that you were really trying to integrate a lot of nature and different forms of nature. You mentioned insects and flowers and so on. Can you talk a little bit about that integration for you of how you thought about that and how you worked through that?
So I think it was kind of coming from two different angles. For what I was trying to say with the work, I was really trying to speak to, at the time when I started it, different ideas of beauty and desire and ideas of acceptance, and just kind of, how there's so much variety. Out in the world when we think about those things. And so I started thinking about the natural world and how much variety there is and how I could pull those things in. Now, one of the tough things about working with botanical forms, which is probably my greatest interest, is that, you can get written off real quick. Oh, those are just pretty little flowers. So how do you say something a little bit more when you're working with a botanical format? And with the botanical format, the one nice thing is that botanicals can put a lot more out there without offending people than, say, figurative sculpture could, right? Those tropical botanicals put it all out there. It's right in front of us, everything that's going on there, right? So I found it to be a format in which, people could view it without, too much shock and awe. And, and really kind of dive in and take a deeper look. And also in a state of, our technology and how much we're getting, divided from the natural world. We spend so much time, more time at our computers. I was missing those days of being a kid and, looking under every leaf and checking out the insects and, hiking and exploring and really being, consumed by nature. So I wanted to bring some of that to the work, really like when the viewer's looking at the work, find a way to really pull them in. So you'll find my work, might have that bright shock and awe from a distance, right? That color really grabs people from across the gallery. But I try to have really minute details on every piece so that if someone takes the time to walk across the gallery to look at it, they're rewarded by some little fine little detail or, a little bit of flocking, a slight texture change that's really going to pull them in and make them want to stay and engage with the work longer.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
You've also alluded to sexuality in your work, is I'm thinking, is what you're trying to say, the around the pieces having some sexuality to them, and that's different in that floral form as it is in a human form, although they're both can be very sexual, right? And as you said, flowers really put it out there, although most people don't think of it that way. Can
Right.
you tell and so that's safer maybe, I guess, right? Tell us a little bit about how people respond to that.
I've had some very interesting responses to it. So, I came from California and moved to Utah where I started doing this body of work. So, coming from a very liberal, open state to going to a much more quiet, conservative state, right? So, when I started to want to talk about the sexuality and these ideas of beauty and eroticism and acceptance, how could I do that where I wasn't going to offend people and that they were still going to engage with the work? And that brought me to the botanical forms. It was a really good way to go, I think, because like I was saying before, if I were doing the same ideas and concepts and straightforward figurative work, I think a lot of people would be, offended by it or might, not engage. But because it's, masked just slightly into these botanical forms, they seem to engage much more. Now it's left me with a little bit of a struggle because, plants usually are so rooted. So how do you get a little bit more animation in there? How do you get it to not be quite so literal when it comes to the plant forms? And, I've done a lot of research of plants. I travel around the world going to all kinds of botanical gardens, many tropical places so that I can really be seeing a huge variety of plants. And then I'm mixing and matching, and I'm creating my own plants. I rarely create, this is a, such and such. I mix and I match and I create these forms. I try to get rid of, some of the planted structure of them, right? Like, except for one of my very last pieces, you will rarely see roots and the actual full plant structure. It's altered, it's abstracted. Most of the petals are made to be feel very engorged and, full. It's really brought down to these compositions that are mostly about the reproductive parts of the plants as a metaphor for the human sexuality and different, genitals and different parts that we see in the human body and those ideas of desire and eroticism that are equated with those.
And what are you trying to get the audience to see or think about with your work? Is there a message that you're trying to get across, or is it a conversation you're wanting to evoke?
The original work was really just having people think about their own ideas of beauty and desire, and just kind of look at, these abstracted plant forms and see what it brought to mind for them. There were very, many very interesting conversations of what a form would evoke in one person versus another person. But I have been pushing my body of work into a new direction in my last show. This last year, I was lucky enough to have a grant from the state of California through the Inland Empire, which is in an area in Southern California. And with this grant, I was able to employ four other artists with myself. And we put together a show that was championing women's rights and LGBTQ plus rights. And we were speaking, my work specifically was speaking to the erosion of our rights right now. And so these platforms were now becoming a metaphor or a platform for which I could then dive into that a little bit deeper. So I created three pieces for this exhibition. And one of them was a piece where you actually do see the whole plant and you see the roots of that plant just, trying and trying to get to some type of substance. Something that's going to nurture and sustain them, and you can see it being drained away from underneath. So, my work is moving in a more political realm, even though I'm keeping with the plant metaphor. I am speaking to some greater concepts now.
Very cool. And how do you find people are responding to that now?
It's interesting, some people respond to it and they get the takeaway right away, and for others it's a little bit more abstract for them and they might need a little bit more of a lead into what the topic is. But for those people, one thing that I love about the body of work is that it can also be seen as a statement in environmentalism. What does it take to sustain life? What does it take to sustain these plants? Are we depriving them of it? And how are we depriving them of it? So I love that there's two ways to have this conversation, and both ways are the things that are most important to me. So I feel like it's a win-win.
Yes, absolutely. And in lots of ways, that offers an opportunity, I think, for people to engage with the work without getting offended, right? They could move in either direction, whatever makes them feel more comfortable. And you, as the artist, can work with that, right? You can have a flow of conversation in line with that individual who's there.
Absolutely, absolutely. And both are so important, right?
Yes,
How are we
absolutely.
staying life without our environment? And then what we do, what is our, when we do, what's our quality of life, right?
I could see that moving into thinking about the acceptance of the environment. You were using the word acceptance of our sexuality, but really also the environment, because I guess I'm really into that as well. So that's very much a key driver for me. I get that. Yeah, that's very interesting. I wondered if we could move a little bit more into talking about the work itself and maybe some of the technical pieces. And I wondered if you how you choose your color palette. Like what this you've got a wide variation in the kind of things that you put into your work. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Right, yeah. So I have in my botanical forms, I feel like I have kind of two different realms. I have my studies of form, and this is the little bit older work where you see kind of a black foundation to the plants, and then the sexual reproductive parts are the bright, vivid colors. And those I started doing in order to not only really start pushing those plant ideas and follow that idea of abstraction that I was talking about before. And I wanted to find a way to pull away from the literal plant. And so by making the lower part of the plant black, which is a black underglaze that I'm over firing, so it has just a little bit of sheen to it. Almost looks like skin. When we look at our skin, it actually does have a little bit of a sheen, and I'm trying to recreate that. And I see that as a visual foundation for the visual form. But at the same time, it abstracts that plant form. So we're not just seeing green leaves, green stems, knowing that there's going to be roots underneath. And I th think it gives the piece the idea that it could be a little bit more animated. Then, That's the framework, that's the foundation to create this composition on the top of it that's vivid, bright color, focusing the viewer's eyes into what's going on with the reproductive elements of those plants.
Yes.
So that's where I started. And I have found with some of the larger work, I've pulled away from the black foundation in the plant forms. And I'm keeping them a little bit more literal as I'm trying to push some of these other concepts with the work. So now you're seeing a lot more of those chartreuse greens and the real vivid greens in the lower half of the forms. And again, really hot, vibrant colors in the other areas. So, and all of my work is done with the Amoco Velvet underglazes for my surfaces.
They're gorgeous, aren't they? I love working with them. They're so, they're easy in some ways, I think, right? To get the image that you're after.
Yeah. They're so easy to work with. They're so versatile. And, I've kind of really sunk myself into that particular palette and, have been really able to learn the personality of every one of the colors. So I know exactly which one's going to start to vitrify at exactly, what temperature. And I can even start to play that sheen off of some of the other colors that are not starting to vitrify yet. So it's fun when you really get to know that palette.
Yes, absolutely. Very cool. Are there any particular combinations of those colors that you like to use or I guess even don't like to use?
Well, anybody who knows me and knows me well knows that I am not a fan of the color blue. So you will very rarely ever see any blue in my artwork. I might creep into the blue green, but that's about as close as it goes. Otherwise, it's hot, hot colors. Flame orange has to be my absolute favorite.
Yeah. Me too. I love that one. Yeah, absolutely. Oh,
that one is so good. Yes. Yeah. And then playing off of that chartreuse. I mean, just that contrast of getting that chartreuse in there really pumps up the other colors. And if any of the colors in the color palette aren't bright enough for me, one thing I've learned to do is if you put intense yellow under and then paint other colors over the top of the intense yellow, it just intensifies everything.
Oh, very good. A little secret of your techniques.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing. That's a great idea. Hey, now what about form? Because form is so important in our work that we work with, right? How do you balance the color palette that you use with the underglazes with form and texture?
Mm-hmm. My form and texture is so important for me. I feel like if there's any place that I leave smooth, then I'm going to have to do some pretty incredible detail there. But I'm really using my carving from underneath to create the breaking and the moments where I'm going to create depth with the underglaze. So my form, I feel, is really imperative to create those layers and that depth. So you'll find like a lot of times I'll layer in color into the low areas, and then I'm using, the actual structure and like kind of dry brushing over the top to create highlights in the color that's actually being produced physically by the form that I'm painting over.
Okay, very interesting. And are there certain forms that are a challenge for you? I guess I'm thinking that sometimes I know when I've tried to use an underglaze, for example, with tiny little pieces, then sometimes even literally trying to get your brush in there might be a challenge, right? At least it is for me. What kind of challenges do you find in doing this kind of work?
I do have some challenges. One thing that's helped me out, 1 year at Inseca, I found paint brushes that were made with an angle in them.
Oh, yeah.
And I haven't seen them since. So I'm hoping maybe this year at Inseca, I'll find them again. But those help me get into some little nooks and crannies. But another secret is a lot of times I build my objects in pieces and assemble after my surface is done.
Mm.
Oh, yeah, my pieces might be made in, three, four different sections, and then I make sure everything fits together real well, so you're not really going to see that connection. And I've also found I can use a couple of epoxies that I can color to match the underglazes. And so even if you maybe see a little bit, it's all colored to match and you wouldn't know.
It's nice to be able to do that with sculpture, isn't it? That with functional work, you just can't, right? But with sculpture work, you can use epoxies and sandblast, and you can do all sorts of things to give the surface to whatever it is you're interested in.
Yeah, the sky's the limit. And I love breaking out of that and even adding different elements. So sometimes, I might mix a two-part rubber and there might be a little area that's encased in rubber, or there might be an area that has, flocking on it. Or another favorite of mine, when I was traveling in Australia, I once found these vintage millinery elements for hat making that were vintage made, handmade in the Czech Republic. So well traveled.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that's very interesting. I know I still have two big buckets of my mother's buttons in my studio that she used in her sewing. And sometimes those pieces end up on some sculpture. Sometimes they don't, but they're always there in the back of my mind. So very much kind of what you were talking about.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I love that freedom in sculpture to break free and pull from other areas.
Yeah, it's so cool. Hey, now, you said you've traveled a fair bit and that you're not making your pieces to look exactly like a flower that you might find in Costa Rica or some part of the world. What kind of organic form are you shooting for when you sit down in front of your work? Is it really a bit of fantasy that comes out of you in terms of the kind of form that you're trying to create for the work? Like, tell us a bit about that.
It is. Over the years with this botanical body of work, I've always got the idea of I want these forms to look like, when you shut the door on the gallery and you walk away, that these are going to come to life and have their own little adventure, as soon as we turn our back. So I'm always thinking about, how can I animate them? How can I alter this, typical botanical structure? And that's led me, to looking at a lot of insects and different things like that to kind of like integrate a little bit more animation into the forms. So they really are, a combination of different things. Some of them are starting to acquire, wings or, things that look like legs or, all these different things to kind of bring that extra element of animation to them. And the other thing I'm looking at in the tropical plants specifically, they have such great color, but they also have, much like the typical succulents we see, they are engorged. There's a fullness to them that, just makes them feel so lush and so alive. And so I'm really trying to pull that into the work as well.
Yeah, very cool. Now, let's say you had some students working with you, some people who weren't as experienced and sophisticated as you with your work. What kind of guidance would you give them? What advice might you give somebody who's starting to work in this area?
In the botanical area or just in clay in general?
Well, how about both?
I would say for students working in the botanical area, it really comes down to structure and, what can you get the clay to do and, structurally hold within the firing process and post-firing process. So there's a lot of conversation about the engineering of it and how we can push it. Definitely what I was just talking about by, that fullness that I put into all of my, petals and blooms really gives me a structural advantage when working with the clay because I'm not trying to use paper thin elements. So with students, I spend a lot of time talking engineering. I love the engineering of forms and I love, I am a professor, and so I do talk to them a lot about it. And in my classes, I'm always trying to push, engineering that's going to take them not somewhere just in ceramics, but in the outside world as well. So they're understanding how things are made and how things are working around them. And in clay in general, you know, make, try it, experiment with it, see what happens, you know. With sculpture, I'm always, you know, pushing people, you know, don't be done now. Like, you're not happy with it, keep going. What's next? Keep going. So yeah, it's always fun and playful that way. And when it comes to utilitarian work with my students, you know, I think because I come from a maker point of view, I'm definitely a maker before I'm a conceptual person, right? That's almost like the second step. You know, I really want that functionality to be incredibly comfortable to use, very usable, surface friendly, you know, all of those things that just make that your object that you want to use every single day.
Yeah, it's got to feel right. And yeah, absolutely. Hey, you know, I've run into a few people who are anxious and worried about showing their work to others. And I wonder, given your work as a professor, whether you've encountered that, and if you have any ideas about how somebody can overcome that internal worry, I guess, of, you know, being judged by others and so on.
Yes. Well, I think my first instinct would be you're never going to make everybody happy, right? So, you know, it's just a matter of finding your audience rather than worrying about, you know, if somebody doesn't like something, you haven't found your audience yet. There's somebody out there for everything. That would probably be my address to the worry. As for, you know, with students, I have to say, I don't go out of my way to show my students my work because I'm not there to create mini me's. I'm there to help them find their voice. So if my students research me, if my students know that I have a big project going on and what I'm doing, you know, I will absolutely talk to them about it and engage. But I'm not going to walk into the classroom and be like, woohoo, this is what I make, because I don't want them to feel like, oh, I'm going to have to make these things, you know, to get the grade or succeed in this program. Mm-hmm. I want them absolutely, you know, engaging with the material and finding their own voice.
Yeah, that's pretty critical, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Are there any specific exercises or practices that you might suggest an emerging artist engage in? So you talked about doing more, keep doing. Anything else come to mind?
Keep doing. I'd say keep looking. I think the first thing that I notice about young students that I'm working with is they're like, oh, I've done that. I made a coil pot. I've done that. It's like, well, you've done one. Like, what's next? Like, do more, right? So always be watching and looking, you know, and I'm always telling them, you know, I'm always going to workshops and conferences and things that I'm going to learn from. And, you know, I might go to an artist who's doing, you know, what some people might feel is a basic, you know, workshop on basic hand building skills, but there's always going to be something new I'm going to pick up, something I haven't thought of, a different way of looking at something, different way of holding a tool can make all the difference in the world. Yep. Right. So I'd say always be looking, never think you're above something, because there's always an opportunity to learn.
It's true. And really, I find that I can learn from all sorts of things. I can learn from painters, right? So I've recently been interested in color, as you can imagine. And so I'm finding all sorts of really cool ideas from painters, for example, who are doing some great work with color, that then I have to take that idea and find a way to apply it in some way to the clay.
And that's exactly what I was talking about with the intense yellow underglaze, right? To pump up that color. I came about doing that because of thinking back to my painting classes, and how you could build an entire composition in your sepia colors and then glaze it over the top with an additional coloring, bring out any kind of, emotion that you wanted from that scene. And I thought, oh, okay, well, if I want, this vivid undertone of color from this form, why not paint the whole thing yellow first and then go from there?
Yeah, very cool, very cool. Hey, so what's your next step? What's the next thing for you that you're either is just an idea in your mind or maybe a bit more than an idea? Where are you going?
Well, I really want to continue this work that I was doing with the grant. So the actual formation of the grant was only for 1 year, but I loved that communal process and the way I was working for the grant. So it ended with an exhibition of myself and my four students having a show together. So that was 4 decades of women represented, and these, five completely different voices coming from, different cultures, different ages, different sexualities, all the above. So I want to continue that format and put together more exhibitions where I'm pulling in artists with different voices and different points of view that are going to continue to speak to those ideas of how human rights are being eroded right now.
Yeah, that diversity is really important in, I mean, both in a societal sense, but also in an artistic sense, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. So I look forward to doing that. I've done a few other pop-up exhibitions, in and around with Encica and also in my Southern California area. So I'm going to continue that march and see, what I can get put together. And I'll be continuing my work with this little political twist to it. Let's see how much we can get those plants to say.
Well, thanks so much for joining us today. I really appreciated learning about you and your work and some of your ideas. I think it's wonderful and thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. This was a joy.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Color and Ceramics Podcast with Bob Acton and his guests. Please help others find the podcast by subscribing to this podcast wherever you find your podcasts, such as iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, YouTube, or other podcatchers. And don't forget to give us a review. We'll see you next time.